Today, as we continue working our way in the series we're going through in the life of David, we're going to look at 2 Samuel chapter 18. We're going to actually read all the way from verse 1 through chapter 19, verse 8. We'll be there in a couple moments. King David, his third son Absalom, is staging a rebellion against him. David and all of his loyal supporters, they have fled from Jerusalem. And the Lord provided Hushai to thwart the counsel of Ahithophel, so that David is able to escape over the Jordan River with all of his followers. He's able to get to the city of Mahanaim. Absalom, he has gathered the army of Israel. They're encamping in the land of Gilead. And during this time, others who are loyal to David, they're able to show up and to join him in this battle against Absalom and Absalom's army. Sadly enough, however, there are 20,000 soldiers who died. Absalom, he is also killed. And this account of our scripture this morning, it tells us of Absalom's death and David's mourning for his son, Absalom. I'm going to ask you to stand as we read through our scriptures. Again, if you need to stay seated, by all means, please do. If you have to sit down for it, God understands, and you can sit anytime you need to. David mustered the men who were with him and appointed over them commanders of thousands and commanders of hundreds. David sent out his troops, a third under the command of Joab, a third under Joab's brother Abishai, son of Zeruiah, and a third under Ittai the Gittite. The king told the troops, "I myself will surely march out with you." But the men said, "You must not go out. If we are forced to flee, they won't care about us. Even if half of us die, they won't care, but you are worth 10,000 of us. It would be better now for you to give us support from the city." The king answered, "I will do whatever seems best to you." So the king stood beside the gate while all the men marched out in units of hundreds and of thousands. The king commanded Joab, Abishai, and Ittai, "Be gentle with the young man Absalom, for my sake." And all the troops heard the king giving orders concerning Absalom to each of the commanders. David's army marched out of the city to fight Israel, and the battle took place in the forest of Ephraim. There Israel's troops were routed by David's men, and the casualties that day were great, 20,000 men. The battle spread out over the whole countryside, and the forest swallowed up more men that day than the sword. Now Absalom happened to meet David's men. He was riding his mule, and as the mule went under the thick branches of a large oak, Absalom's hair got caught in the tree, and he was left hanging in midair while the mule he was riding kept on going. When one of the men saw what had happened, he told Joab, "I just saw Absalom hanging in an oak tree." Joab said to the man who had told him this, "What? You saw him? Why didn't you strike him to the ground right there? Then I would have had to give you 10 shekels of silver and a warrior's belt." But the man replied, "Even if 1,000 shekels were weighed out into my hands, I would not lay a hand on the king's son. In our hearing, the king commanded you and Abishai and Ittai, protect the young man Absalom for my sake. And if I had put my life in jeopardy, and nothing is hidden from the king, you would have kept your distance from me." Joab said, "I'm not going to wait like this for you." So he took 3 javelins in his hand and plunged them into Absalom's heart while Absalom was still alive in the oak tree. And 10 of Joab's armor bearers surrounded Absalom, struck him, and killed him. Then Joab sounded the trumpet, and the troops stopped pursuing Israel, for Joab halted them. They took Absalom, threw him into a big pit in the forest, and piled up a large heap of rocks over him. Meanwhile, all the Israelites fled to their homes. During his lifetime, Absalom had taken a pillar and erected it in the king's valley as a monument to himself, for he thought, "I have no son to carry on the memory of my name." He named the pillar after himself, and it is called Absalom's Monument to this day. Now Ahimaaz, son of Zadok, said, "Let me run and take the news to the king that the Lord has vindicated him by delivering him from the hand of his enemies. You are not the one to take the news today, Joab told him. You may take the news another time, but you must not do so today because the king's son is dead. Then Joab said to a Cushite, go tell the king what you have seen. The Cushite bowed down before Joab and ran off. Ahimaaz, son of Zadok, again said to Joab, come what may, please let me run behind the Cushite. But Joab replied, my son, why do you want to go? You don't have any news that will bring you a reward. He said, come what may, I want to run. So Joab said, run. Then Ahimaaz ran by way of the plain and outran the Cushite. While David was sitting between the inner and outer gates, the watchman went up to the roof of the gateway by the wall. As he looked out, he saw a man running alone. The watchman called out to the king and reported it. The king said, if he is alone, he must have good news. And the runner came closer and closer. Then the watchman saw another runner, and he called down to the gatekeeper, look, another man running alone. The king said, he must be bringing good news too. The watchman said, it seems to me that the first one runs like Ahimaaz, son of Zadok. He's a good man, the king said. He comes with good news. Then Ahimaaz called out to the king, all is well. He bowed down before the king with his face to the ground and said, praise be to the Lord your God. He has delivered up those who lifted their hands against my lord the king. The king asked, is the young man Absalom safe? Ahimaaz answered, I saw great confusion just as Joab was about to send the king's servant and me, your servant, but I don't know what it was. The king said, stand aside and wait here. So he stepped aside and stood there. Then the Cushite arrived and said, may the Lord hear the good news. The Lord has vindicated you today by delivering you from the hand of all who rose up against you. The king asked the Cushite, is the young man Absalom safe? The Cushite replied, may the enemies of my lord the king and all who rise up to harm you be like that young man. The king was shaken. He went up to the room over the gateway and wept. As he went, he said, oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom, if only I had died instead of you, oh, Absalom, my son, my son. Joab was told, the king is weeping and mourning for Absalom and the whole army. The victory that day was turned into mourning because on that day the troops heard, said, the king is grieving for his son. The men stole into the city that day as men steal in who are ashamed when they flee from battle. The king covered his face and cried aloud, oh, my son Absalom, oh, Absalom, my son, my son. Then Joab went into the house to the king and said, today you have humiliated all your men who have just saved your life and the lives of your sons and daughters and the lives of your wives and concubines. You love those who hate you and hate those who love you. You have made it clear today that the commanders and their men mean nothing to you. I see that you would be pleased if Absalom were alive today and all of us were dead. Now go out and encourage your men. I swear by the Lord that if you don't go out, not a man will be left with you by nightfall. This will be worse for you than all the calamities that have come on you from your youth till now. So the king got up and took his seat in the gateway. When the men were told the king is sitting in the gateway, they all came before him. Meanwhile, the Israelites had fled to their homes. Thank you. You may be seated and may the Lord bless the reading of his holy word. Historians tell us that the Black Plague or Black Death, it ran in various forms from 1347 all the way to 1665. It killed at least 25 million people in Europe. And from somewhere around 75 million to 200 million people worldwide. The symptoms, get this, they're flu-like symptoms that appear after an incubation period of somewhere around 3 to 7 days. Sound familiar at all? In 17th century England, there was a village called Eyam. And in September of 1665, a tailor's assistant brought a bunch of flea-infested blankets from London. And soon, many of the estimated 800 residents of Eyam, they were dying from the disease. Eyam's rector, his name was William Mompesson, along with the previous rector, decided to quarantine the village to contain the disease. Eyam lay in an important trade route between two prominent cities. And if the current plague was brought to either one of those cities, many more people would die. So together they persuaded the villagers to voluntarily self-quarantine. According to an eyewitness account, a quarantine cordon was established with a one-mile radius marked by a ring of stones. For 14 months, nobody went in or out of the village. Food was left at the boundary stones by nearby townspeople in exchange for gold coins that were submerged in vinegar because the villagers believed that the vinegar would disinfect the coins. The death rate had skyrocketed. One woman, her name was Elizabeth Hancock, she buried six of her children and her husband within a month. Now, to limit infections within Eyam, church services, they were held outdoors. Some of the villagers left their homes to live outdoor nearby. By the plague's end, some 260 of Eyam's estimated 800 residents had died, more than double the mortality rate of the plague in London. The villagers' self-sacrifice, it had worked. The plague never spread to the nearby towns. And some 14 months later, in November of 1667, the quarantine, it was lifted. An Eyam survivor's descendant wrote in a history of the village that succeeding generations of Eyam villagers, they should admire their ancestors who, in a sublime, unparalleled resolution, gave up their lives, yea, doomed themselves to pestilential death to save the surrounding country. Now, I mention that story for two reasons. First, it's at least interesting in light of the current pandemic, worldwide pandemic that we're facing. Some of the stuff sounds fairly similar. But second, and this is my main reason for mentioning the story, is the note that Elizabeth Hancock, the one lady, she buried six of her children and her husband inside a month. See, it's not common for parents to have to bury their children. The more normal pattern is for children to bury their parents. And by this time in our study, as we're working our way through the life of David, he's already had to bury at least two and possibly even three of his children. Scholars believe that Chiliad, one of David's sons, most likely died as a teenager, so that would be one. The child born to David and Bathsheba, that child died at birth. And then Amnon, he died by Absalom's hand. And so David's heart must have been heavy. It must have been weary from having to bury at least two and possibly three of his sons. And now David is facing his rebellious son, Absalom, who is trying to kill David so that he can take over as the king over all of Israel. David, however, he has found time to muster his troops. And being vastly more experienced in military matters, he knew that he would be victorious. Our scripture shows us a father's inordinate sorrow for a rebellious son. And the very first thing we see as we work through our scripture is the death of a son. David, he's on the east side of the Jordan River in a town called Mahanaim. 2 Samuel chapter 18, verse 1 says, David mustered the men who were with him and appointed over them commanders of thousands and commanders of hundreds. A few days have elapsed. And those loyal to David, several of them, they come to him from all over the countryside. David divided his army into three divisions, a third under the command of Joab, a third under Joab's brother Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, and a third under Ittai the Gittite. David indicated that he would go out with his army, as he had done countless times before. However, his leaders, they urge him to stay there in Mahanaim, for they actually said to him, you must not go out. If we are forced to flee, they won't care about us. Even if half of us die, they won't care. But you are worth 10,000 of us. It would be better now for you to give your support from the city. See, David's men, they clearly cared about their leader. They cared about his safety and his well-being. And so David, he listens to their counsel and he stays there in Mahanaim. And so as the troops, as they're marching out of the city, David ordered Joab and Abishai and Ittai, be gentle with the young man Absalom for my sake. And all the people heard when the king gave the orders to the commanders about Absalom. David's command to be gentle with Absalom, it was a very poor command to give to his military leaders. David seemed to be more concerned about his son than about the lives of his own soldiers. Now, General Douglas MacArthur, he hated war, but he hated appeasement even more. His view of war, that war should be the very last resort, but once you enter into war and you begin that battle, then you had to soundly defeat and not be gentle with the enemy. David's army, they go out to battle against Absalom's army there in the forest of Ephraim. And David's army, most likely it is made up of some more experienced soldiers, certainly more gifted military leaders. They defeated Absalom's army. In fact, again, 20,000 men died in that battle. And the first part of verse 9 says, now Absalom happened to meet David's men. The word happen gives us the impression that Absalom's meeting of the servants of David came about by chance. It was just a circumstance, a coincidence, if you will. But of course, we know that this is not the case because nothing happens by chance. There is no coincidence in all this. God is orchestrating even this event to accomplish his sovereign purpose. And then verse 9, it continues and says, he was riding his mule, and as the mule went under the thick branches of a large oak, Absalom's hair got caught in a tree, and he was left hanging in midair while the mule he was riding kept on going. And you can chuckle or giggle a little bit if you want, because it had to be some funny sight and things like that just to see that happen. Now, it's commonly held that Absalom's hair, of which he was excessively proud, it got caught in the branches. There are some versions, some scriptures that actually said it was his head that got caught. And it's likely that as he's riding along, he hits his head on a branch, and he probably got caught somewhere around here. And he may have been left dangling, knocked out, and just kind of dangling there from this tree. Joab is told that Absalom is hanging in a tree. And he hurried to the tree, and he took 3 javelins in his hand and plunged them into Absalom's heart while Absalom was still alive in the oak tree. And 10 of Joab's armor bearers surrounded Absalom, struck him, and killed him. And so with Absalom dead, Joab, he called for his soldiers to stop pursuing Absalom's army. Basically, he called a halt to the war. The war is over. Absalom is dead. They took Absalom and they threw him into a big pit in the forest and piled a large heap of rocks over him. Absalom, he is unceremoniously buried there in the forest. Not in this lavish monument that he had erected outside Jerusalem in his own honor. And while I was reading this and studying for this, I actually went on the internet. And you can go and you can type in Absalom's monument, and it's still there even today. This thing that was erected for him. And they don't know if he's buried there or if he's still left out in the forest and stuff like that. Now, regarding Absalom's death, Richard Phillips concludes, Absalom was a faithless son who had died because of God's faithfulness to his father. Absalom was born an heir to the glory of God's covenant with David, but seeking a glory of his own, he died in shame. Absalom placed his hope in evil scheming and in the strength of human flesh. He therefore perished, as Paul would later say of the Gentiles in Ephesians chapter 2, having no hope and without God in the world. And so we move from the death of a son into the despair of a father. when Ahimaaz desired to run and to go and tell David that the army had been victorious over Absalom and his army, Joab at first refused to let him go. But after Joab sinned this Cushite to give the news to David, Ahimaaz, he again requested, he's basically begging, please, I want to run, I want to go. And so Joab relented and granted Ahimaaz permission to go and take the news to David. And Ahimaaz, he went by a different route. He ran by way of the plains and he outran the Cushite. There's a watchman, he is standing up keeping watch, and he informs David that there's a runner who's coming to him. It would most likely mean that David's forces, they were victorious. Because if his army had been defeated, a lot of men, they would be returning to the city, having been defeated. And then the watchman, he spotted Ahimaaz, who was running toward him. And then David believed that for sure now it is good news. And Ahimaaz, he arrives first, and he cries out to the king, all is well. But David only wanted to know one thing. He wanted to know about Absalom. Is the young man Absalom safe? Ahimaaz said that he did not really know. And then the Cushite arrived, and he also told David that the revolt, it had been stopped. Again, David only wanted to know about Absalom. The Cushite replied, may the enemies of my lord the king and all who rise up to harm you be like that young man. And then we read one of the most poignant expressions of grief in the entire Bible. In verse 33, the king was shaken. He went up to the room over the gateway and wept. As he went, he said, oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom, if only I had died instead of you, O Absalom, my son. And then when David's victorious army came returning, they heard of David's inordinate sorrow, O for Absalom. They enter into Mahanaim stealthily. And this day of victory, it was turned into a day of mourning, a day of sadness. And then Joab, he actually comes to King David and he accuses him of loving those who hate him and hating those who love him. In fact, Joab even goes as far as to say, you have made it clear today that the commanders and their men, they mean nothing to you. I see that you would be pleased if Absalom were alive today and all of us were dead. And he warned David that if he did not change his behavior before the people and comfort them, then all the people would desert him. And David, he listened to Joab and he heeded Joab's counsel. He arose, he went to the gate and he comforted the people. But what caused David such great despair over the death of his son Absalom? What caused David such great despair over the death of his son Absalom? Well, Del Ralph Davis, he gives us an answer. He actually writes, it is David's guilt that inflames his grief. Nathan had assured David that he would not die, but that David's infant son would die, and that son did die. And then Amnon is murdered, and now Absalom, he has perished. And David knew that his sin, it had set loose the sword on his own household. And that is why David cries out in despair. If only I had died instead of you, O Absalom, my son, my son. You see, David, he was guilty of sin against Bathsheba and of Uriah. And yet it is Absalom who is now suffering the consequences of David's sin. That does not negate Absalom's own sin against his father and the things that he had been doing. And David wished that he had died because he knew that he deserved to die for punishment for his sins, the things he had done wrong. And this story, it again points us to David's greater son, Jesus Christ. You see, we, each one of us, we are all like Absalom. We are faithless, we are rebellious. We do not want to submit to the kingship of Jesus. And in our result, in our revolt against him, we want to do things our own ways. We want him out of our lives. We want to do it the way we want to do it. But you see, Jesus, he is the king whom God has anointed to rule forever and ever. And when Jesus Christ hung on a cross, he cried out, as it were, if you listen, "Would I have died instead of you, O Val, my son, my son." You see, and then Jesus Christ, he died in my place. He died so that I could be forgiven, so that I could be reconciled with my Heavenly Father. Jesus died instead of me. Jesus died instead of you to pay a debt that you could not pay. And if you have never done so today, you could turn your life over to Jesus. You could submit to him. You could surrender to the kingship of Jesus and let him be the Lord and master of your life. But maybe you've done that. Maybe you've accepted Jesus Christ, but that was years ago, years and years ago, decades ago. And you just find yourself struggling right now, just really struggling. And things have become tarnished, and the joy and the excitement that was there then, it's not there now. You just seem to be tired. Jesus came to give us life. If we were willing to surrender ourselves to him, he can bring back the joy. He can put that joy into our lives. The question is, are we willing to surrender to the kingship of Jesus?